Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Ah, Thanksgiving. Welcome to another edition of the Chicago Way, Radio Free Chicago in podcast form, with me, an expert Thanksgiving pie baker himself, Jeff Carlin. We're thinking Thanksgiving, those pre-Thanksgiving jitters, and the post-Thanksgiving carb letdown. But what am I thankful for? Besides my nation, my family, my job, and the fact that a reader made that killer Legend of Castle theme song just for me? I'm thankful for Thanksgiving, because there's nothing like sitting around the Thanksgiving table with those you love, passing the turkey and the stuffing, telling those old stories, young and old sharing that good warm feeling, a feeling like hot biscuits just out of the oven, yearning for that butter. But these are odd and angry times, aren't they? So with that good feeling, you're also wondering when some loving liberal niece or nephew will pin your hand to the table with a fork as you scream bloody murder and your wife says, "John, honey, didn't I tell you not to talk politics at the table? Pass the cranberries and use your good hand." That's American Thanksgiving in this crazy political year. I've already told people to lock up all the white males in the basement where they belong, and if the liberals get too snarky, just keep your mouth shut, stare at that horrid, wretched jello on your plates, and think of Thanksgiving. Now, if you get past the angry election animosity, that fork in your hand, the jello, you'll realize that you have something to be thankful for on Thanksgiving and on the days to come. You have friends and family who don't care about politics, and all those good movies that are coming out now, the ones you plan on seeing at the theater, not on your TV, and the leftovers. If there's one guy in Chicago who knows firsthand about people calling 911 to clean up their Thanksgiving domestic problems like the guy with the fork in his hand, and the same guy knows about good Thanksgiving leftovers, Peter Bella, the cooking cop. Peter?
Good morning, John.
So, okay. Yep.
Thanks for being here, Pete.
Can I ask Jeff that question?
Ask him, but first ax him.
Ax him, that's what I meant, ax him. I'm Listen, you know, John and I come from that tribe, the carnivores, you know, and we hunt down and conquer animals to eat.
Well, wait. I know where this is going, but let me stop you. When was the last time you actually hunted and conquered the animals? Other than opening the package.
About 12 years ago when grouse hunting.
We hunt and we hunt the animals with spears, and our women wear leather like Raquel Welch clothes from 10,000 BC. Okay, go on.
Anyways, yeah. Thanksgiving, everybody fights over the drumsticks, you know, and used to get these fights, and, you know, the guy with the knife in the back, and he's got the death grip on the drumstick. What do vegetarians and vegans fight over on Thanksgiving?
Mashed potatoes and, I think, cranberry sauce.
I'll kill you if you touch my lima beans?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, and then, you know, any of the assorted vegetables or the sweet potatoes, you know.
Well, you know, Squanto told everybody to put a fish next to the corn. Right? Mm-hmm. So there's that for Thanksgiving, you know?
Exactly.
My dad tried that with catfish in Florida when he was in Marco Island when he was retired. He said, well, didn't the Indians put so he'd catch these stupid catfish. We hated them. Slimy little catfish. And
bones.
Yeah, and he'd throw them in a hole and when he planted something. And
it stunk.
Yeah, there were a couple rats out there, and then there were snakes. So that's what happens. Yeah. Okay. So what are we going to make for our leftovers, Peter Bella?
To me, I just a big bowl of dressing. That's my leftover. That's what I like to eat. Turkey pot pie. Buy a pie crust, you know, put a little mulligan, what they call a little flour in there, and thicken it up and make a nice turkey pot pie.
Yeah. What do you do? But how do you make it creamy?
A little flour and you make some broth and like you make chicken pot pie.
Well, walk us through it because people don't know.
You put the turkey in a pot with some stock.
Right. You can use chicken stock.
You use chicken stock and then just add a little flour.
Make a roux.
Just to thicken it up a little bit. Yeah. I like to use potato starch, but it works better.
Potato's better, yeah.
Stir it in until it gets kind of thick. Not real
thick.
Do
you have to make a slurry when you do that?
You can.
Yeah.
I just sprinkle it in.
Yeah, lightly.
Whisk it in.
Right.
Yeah. And then thicken it up because it's going to thicken some more when you bake it.
Some peas.
And maybe some, you know, if you got any leftover pearled onions, toss those in there.
That's it.
Let it cool a little bit. Put the pie crust on top, put in the oven.
I like that idea. I also like the idea of just a good turkey sandwich.
That's, on some toasted bread.
You know what kind, though? What kind? Toronto bread. One of those, the penne, it's like a big loaf.
Right.
I don't know what they call it, but to me it makes the best toast.
I found out, I tried this, actually.
Toronto, if you want to sponsor the podcast, you're more than welcome.
When you toast bread for grilled cheese or whatever,
yeah.
Instead of putting butter on it, put mayonnaise on it because it won't burn as bad, and you can just toast it right in the pan. And then you can put your sandwich on there, and it's really good.
My cousin Tina, who's a great cook, Tina Panos, she uses mayonnaise inside the turkey, like when she does the turkey.
I've seen that, yeah.
Because it's like butter, but it gives you a little, it helps crisp it.
There was a recipe to do fish like that, a whole fish. I forgot what kind of fish, but you slathered it in mayonnaise.
Christmas Eve.
And I could try that.
That'll be Peter Bella's Christmas, seven fishes dinner.
I went with the small plate thing last year to do the seven fishes. It came out a lot better. It was a lot less work.
Than having the huge plates, yeah.
Yeah, making whole fish or whatever. I just made all these little small.
Perfect.
And you're not stuffing yourself and you're not spending a ton of money.
One problem with Thanksgiving, besides the cooking, which I like to do and I think people like to eat, it's the on Thanksgiving. Now, if you're listening to this after Thanksgiving, you would have read and seen stories about Thanksgiving mayhem. Thanksgiving mayhem is when families that don't really like each other, don't see each other, except for holidays, people start drinking. And then the next thing you know, before he was the cooking cop, he was actually a real cop having to do stuff like show up at the house.
Yeah, it's it.
Right?
It
starts over the TV.
Or it starts over the drumstick, or it starts over the whatever. I mean, it's...
Cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
Okay, cranberry. Can we talk about this cranberry sauce?
Sure.
Anybody who used... I'm torn. That song Torn Between Two Lovers? Mm-hmm. You know, remember that song?
Write that down.
Yeah, I know you're going to use it. Between the jellied cranberry out of the can and the real cranberries that my wife makes, which is better?
I like the real myself.
Me too.
But I do like that canned stuff once in a while.
It's got that nostalgia to it,
Yeah. Right?
See, my family too, for my entire life, it was always the canned stuff.
Right.
That's the sound it makes, too.
Right.
Like opening the Crocus ham.
Exactly. I
remember those, too.
I impressed my family. Made fresh, the fresh cranberry sauce and brought it in. Everyone's like, what is this? This is supposed to replace the other stuff. So my dad had to run out and grab a can of the canned cranberry sauce because I was like, I'll bring cranberry. So it goes out to 7-Eleven or whatever.
Right.
And, this can's probably been there for a decade.
But does it affect it?
No, I don't think so. It's well preserved
with a gelatin.
Yeah. So everyone that made the Thanksgiving because everyone had to have the canned stuff.
You always put it on a nice plate. That roll. It always goes on a nice little plate, and you just slice.
What do you do with post Thanksgiving? Some families have to make another turkey. I just have to tell you this.
Really?
I would go over to my sister-in-law's house, Georgia. She makes like a 30-pound turkey and another turkey, but there's like 60 people there, and everyone eats everything. And my boys are going to be like, where's my, you know, can we have a turkey? So I got to make it. So here's another thing. Take the Toronto bread, the whatever those are, the, whatever that is, the big loaf that's sliced. You toast the bread, take the turkey, put it on the bread. Make some peas. Put some peas on the side, a little mushroom, and there you go.
That's it.
You can open a little diner that way, right?
Blue Plate Special.
Blue Plate Special.
It's about $7 sandwich here.
You know? What else can you make out of Thanksgiving Day leftovers?
Turkey chili, if you have enough turkey left over.
That's pukage. Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Turkey chili. Come
my,
on,
my
man.
Dad's favorite. My dad is. Will do the cold turkey leftovers.
Yeah.
Sliced white bread, a little bit of mayonnaise, and a little bit of cranberry, if there's leftover cranberry, and that's it. Like, that's his thing. He loves it. It's his favorite. Easily. And it's... I don't know why,
what
but,
can you do? Dad, you can't argue with
no,
Dad.
No, yeah, Dad's got to have one hand.
The poor guy missed the Cubs.
I know. Well, that's, you know? That's what we're going to do. So instead of watching Packers or any football, we're going to watch the replay of the Cubs because my dad still hasn't seen it.
He still has, what, the whole seven games? Or you
no, no, no,
game
just game seven. Just game seven.
Yeah.
A friend of mine's Tony Fitzpatrick, the artist and actor or whatever. His mother died a couple weeks back. Before she died, she said, you know, make sure my wake ends before 7 o'clock so people can go and watch the Cubs.
I thought he was a Sox fan.
He is a Sox fan. His mother was a Cubs fan, though.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome. Peter, what's your favorite Thanksgiving dish? I mean, what's the – outside the basics, obviously, stuffing. We don't talk stuffing, but
– besides a ribeye steak for Thanksgiving.
I found this – I've been making it the past couple of years. It's Belgian endive, grapes, apples, and – rosemary. And then I added fennel to it last year. It came really good. You start, you cut, you got to make prep everything ahead of time.
Yeah.
You cut the grapes in half. You shave the fennel, cut your apples, semi-thin slices.
Mm-hmm.
You start browning the Belgian endive in some butter. When it browns onto one side, you flip it over. Then you add the apples and the grapes. You throw a sprig of rosemary in there and the fennel. And you just let it cook. And then you serve it.
Like a hash.
No, it's not a hash because it looks...
It's like a... Like a...
It, you slice the endive sliced in half.
So it's softened.
It's softened. Right. And it makes a nice presentation on a plate.
Really?
And it tastes good. Yeah.
I like it.
And that's something that Jeff would like because there's no meat in it. Jeff,
no
you
meat
commie.
In it.
My God, my friend, vegetarian friend that you
that,
are.
That came, I think, from the French vineyards or something. They used to make some
sounds
stuff like
good.
That. Yeah, it was really good, yeah. I actually put up the recipe.
With a glass of Albarino, I'd say.
Something like that,
and yeah.
Some,
and some nice... anchovies from Mitalini. Oh, yeah. Now, what about Jeff with his pie that he didn't bring to me again?
He didn't bring a pie.
He's such a bragger. Okay? Here's Jeff. Here's how you make the pie, the bourbon pecan pie. He brags about it all the time. He gave it to me once. I had one slice at another radio station that fired me. And I've never had the pie again. I'm waiting. Here's Thanksgiving, right? Where's my pie, dude?
Christmas. I'll get you a Christmas pie. What do you want? Do you like mincemeat? You know
what, with real meats?
No.
Don't go medieval on me.
I know. That was my grandma's favorite, was mincemeat pie. Not the real one.
You're going to use that tempeh stuff.
What about this bourbon pie? You making
bourbon
it again?
Pie. I'm not making for Thanksgiving this year. This year I'm doing traditional pumpkin and pecan pie.
Do you use canned pumpkin or do you take the real pumpkin?
Oh, canned pumpkin. Canned pumpkin. We live in Illinois, so it's canned pumpkin's like one of our biggest exports. So I got to go with canned pumpkin.
It's easier, right?
It's easier.
You don't really taste it.
Yeah, and then the actual pumpkin, it adds only adds that consistency. It doesn't really add any flavor because all the flavor comes from the spice and the brown sugar and the nutmeg and
what mistakes do people make when they make pie, either pecan or pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving? They never make it until that day.
Yeah, where they forget to order it.
They make it once a week. They forgot to call cranes.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, it's heat. Usually people will throw it in like 450 and they'll try to, you know, says, oh, run it for 40 minutes at 450 and it usually, you'll get, the edges will get burned, the top will get burned, and then the middle will be cooked. So your trick really is 450 and high, have it like high heat, hot at the top of the oven for like 15, 20 minutes, and then bring the temp down to like a 375.
Kind of like a roast.
Yeah, and then bring it, and even if you can, pull it off and low, put it on the lower end so the bottom has all the heat up against it. Some people put a water bath in there. You don't really need to. I mean, if you're doing a fruit pie, you can do a water bath to keep make sure you get the, you know, everything softens through, but you don't really need that.
Question I have to ask you, Jeff Carlin, being the ace producer that you are, during the Black Friday period, you will have people talking about Black Friday. You'll have reporters out there calling in to RoCon. Ro, I'm with 1,000 people who don't make enough money in the Obama economy, and they're fighting for a TV. What do you think of Black Friday?
I think of Black Friday it's crazy to me. I mean, it was a marketing brilliance in marketing once, like that one time that happened. And you're like, oh, you know, we're going to do deals. It's going to be a great thing. And people went out there and okay, I get it if you're going to do it once. But now it's become this tradition and it's just, it brings out the worst in people, the absolute worst in people.
I like the pre-Black Friday stuff that comes out.
Right.
They're starting early. I mean,
what, like,
I was, some of the stores,
like,
I
could buy a Volvo with a bow on it?
No, before, like, a week or two early, they're starting to, like, with the sales for Black Friday to get people in the stores.
What do people really need for Christmas anyway? Can we call it Christmas still, Jeff, here in the Tribune?
Trump won. You can call it Christmas.
Oh, Trump won. Yeah, the Christian warrior that he is.
Yeah. That's what he said.
Corinthians 2. What did he say?
That was part of his...
Corinthians 2.
Yeah, Corinthians 2.
Yeah, T-O-O.
David. He's like David.
Yeah.
But I hate Black Friday. I think it's stupid. And you know, most stores don't make any money off of it. Like, there's no upswing for them. It's just to get their name out there, named. People see them and see this, the footage of people at their stores and going crazy for them. It's all about an image thing. And there's no money to be
there's
made.
There's no Black Friday for man chairs, is there? No.
No.
There's no Black Friday for scotch, is there?
No.
There's no Black Friday for, like, shooter video games that columnists aren't supposed to admit that they play, is there? No. Right?
No.
My mom, last year, two years ago, there's a builder supply store that has the superstore where they have everything that will remain nameless. But my mom was there with one out in the suburbs like three times or in the morning. She got two kayaks. My mom does not kayak much, but two kayaks.
She
two
doesn't kayak. You guys a kayak.
Yeah, two kayaks. She got a huge ladder, like a really expensive
kayak
ladder.
Kayaks, that's something like Scott Wagsbeck would be doing, I think.
And there's, it's yeah, and then she got, and like a shop vac, and like all the stuff. I'm like, why did you go and get all this stuff? She's like, well, you know, it was on sale. I had to go get
Who
it.
Who kayaks in your family?
Nobody kayaks in my family. I mean, I would kayak maybe if I were in position to go kayaking, you know.
In the Des Plaines River, where you could like touch, the water touches you and you're dead?
Right, exactly.
Wait, your mom bought kayaks?
Yeah, it's kayaks.
You never know when you need a kayak, John.
They were a good deal.
Would she tie him to the car with twine?
Well, yes.
Wait a minute. Okay, so your mom goes out and gets a kayak and then comes back.
Two kayaks.
And what was her thing when she called your dad? Like, I just got a good deal on kayaks, honey. Like,
right. That's exactly it. Absolutely. That'll be right there. I mean, it's...
You just embarrassed.
So where are the kayaks now?
Now they're in my parents' garage. And I don't think they've touched water yet, but I'm sure they will someday.
So they're still there.
Yeah.
In the garage, the kayaks, the pristine condition.
Mm-hmm.
Did she get paddles and everything?
They did come with paddles. I had to ask about that, and she wasn't sure, but they were there.
Does she know that if, like, she and your dad get in the kayak, chances are they will flip over and crack their heads or something?
My mom has kayaked a couple times in Mexico. You know, you use $50, and they, here's your kayak, and you get to go in the...
Kayak in Mexico? Was...
And they, like, watch the little sharks swing around, swim around?
Something like that.
That is just...
It's amazing.
It's outstanding.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. That's Black Friday.
It's Black Friday.
Black Friday.
Right?
Yep.
Can I use that for a column?
You sure can.
Oh, my God. That is good. Did you ever buy anything stupid on Black Friday, Peter Bell?
No.
Because you're Peter Bella. He's too cool to buy something on Black Friday.
I don't go... You know, it's like going out on New Year's Eve. Today, the idiots, it's... amateur
spoken
hour,
like a true copper.
Yeah,
staying in your basement with your bottle of scotch.
Yeah,
you're right.
My bottle of wine.
Yeah,
in my case.
Of wine. Yeah, yeah, but,
yeah, yeah. Just stay in the bunker, and you know.
All right. So if you're gonna leave us with some words of wisdom on anything, what's been on your mind, Peter Bella?
Oh, I don't know. It's been an interesting couple of weeks with the election and stuff.
Right. I have to admit that it's. It's not as good as sex, but almost, I have to say. And it's not that I like the guy.
Right.
It's just that the whining, the crying.
You know, it's really interesting. You see, I shot the day after the election. I was shooting the protest.
Because you should know, everyone, Peter Bell is a great photographer.
Peter, plug your stuff real quick.
Yeah.
Where can people catch you?
Peter, well, my photography website's pvbella.com. I have thecookingcap.com and Interesting Chicago for Chicago Now.
Absolutely. Check out Peter's stuff. It's always entertaining.
It's always good. And Jeff said, when we were going to call you, said he's such a big fan.
I am.
Can you say that to Peter?
I'm a
Peter?
Huge fan of Peter's.
Yeah,
Peter,
I
follow, if you follow Peter on Facebook too, Peter is always... first of all, Peter is always out. Like, if you want to know what's going on in Chicago or like see stuff that's happening, Peter's always out and about checking stuff out.
Right.
And then the stuff.
And he finds things.
I know. And
like the hinge.
Right. The
What's
hinge.
What's the hinge?
The hinge. Oh, man.
That's on the door of St. Michael's in Old Town. I've been by that church 100 times. I never paid attention to it. And I just walked in the other day. I saw it. I said, I got to shoot this.
Yeah. It's this beautiful, ornate. And then there's a story. We don't have time to get into it now. But during the summer festival season, there was an interloper in Peter's backyard. The tent
The tent.
The tent stories. It's such a, that was fun.
And you probably got my rants about my driveway, too, and the bicyclists.
It's called the Bellaville.
Yeah.
You know what
Bellaville,
I mean?
Exactly.
Bellaville, where homeless people just decide to sit behind his house.
Tent B&B.
It's insane.
So check out Peter's stuff. It's good. It's very, very good. And the cooking stuff is great as well. I mean, you can't beat it.
So will you come back again another time and
anytime
talk about
this?
And one last thing. He's got to do voiceover work for, like, you know, now that, what's his name, Hanhart's buddy's dead. What's his name?
Farina?
Farina.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis
yeah.
Farina's dead, right? Poor guy.
Yeah.
We need another guy like this.
These Dem and Those.
No, come on.
We should do a cooking video. We'll do it. The These Dem and Those cooking video.
We should just do it. Actually, before you go, I want to tell you, I was going to do because I hate when columnists do these dialogue columns with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's, come on, man. Think up your own idea. But they do, like, Peter Bella, what do you, but I thought to do one with Peter, Pete and John. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or Pete and Gus.
It sounds like a diner.
Yeah, right, exactly.
A Saturday morning cartoon.
Anyway, thanks a lot, Peter Bella, for coming by. We will try to post, if we could, Peter's recipe on the anise salad. Soft salad with the anchovies on the side that I recommend. And stay safe and keep writing and come back and visit us again.
Thank you for having me. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Politicians and their evil mini-me's often whine about me. They insist that I don't like politicians at all. I like politicians, except for the corrupt, lying, blood-sucking weasels among them. And the universe of my likes is therefore diminished. There are a few good ones, like 32nd Ward Alderman Scott Wagsback. We're not political twins. He's a progressive, and you know that I'm anything but.
But the man is honest and good, and he was willing to stand up to powerfully corrupt forces in Chicago and call them out on their costly deals, like all that money going to Abu Dhabi out of your parking meters, because it was the right thing to do. And I like that. So can an honest, thoughtful man exist in Chicago politics? Yeah, I think so. And he's our guest on the Chicago Way. Good morning, Alderman.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Jeff, this is awesome. What do you want to ask Scott Wagsback?
How about them fire?
Oh, yeah. We have to say that we have to, full disclosure, Scott sits about six rows in front of me at the Chicago Fire Games. Jeff's been there and seen him.
He's never seen popcorn and soda go backwards as much as bottles flying. Stuff
they
like
suck,
that.
Don't they?
Oh my God. It's awful.
Right?
Why it's awful to watch in the last few minutes of every match when John and I are sitting there hoping, like, okay, let's get a draw. And they give one up in like 3 minutes into extra time.
They just always lose. And I think it's a function of ownership. I do.
Yeah.
I do. Although
you can't go two seasons in a row in last place. And then maybe that's why we need relegation, to scare everybody into
competition. You
know, competition, yeah.
Just I like think Europe. That's it. Although every time I support relegation on Twitter, I get all these like fanatic relegation people that think they've adopted me. It's like nuts. Anyway, we're probably talking about stuff nobody knows or cares about.
Yeah. How about the U.S. soccer team?
That's another thing we care about. They suck too.
Yeah. Once mighty. Now it's
once fourth, in the World Cup in the quarterfinal under Bruce Arena, and now Bruce Arena is talking about why don't we have American players? Very interesting, right? He's a progressive guy. You can't really say that in this modern environment. There's some interesting things going on there, but also interesting to me that Scott Wagsback sees things clearly at City Hall. What's going on there? What is the future of this city? The way we're going.
You know, to me, it doesn't look that good. I think we've been, as I've said before, kind of playing this game of risk, and the game is finally catching up to us. And I think that, you know, the problem is that we're not moving forward in a way that I think other cities are. If you kind of go to different cities, you visit with elected officials, you visit with people in those cities, you see like the sea change in the way they operate and the way they do business.
How so?
When you look at the deal making, it's not like it is here. You know, we're not running around cutting deals for, people that are attached to elected officials. I think we're seeing them kind of get out of the old modes of doing business, you know, whether it's Denver, Seattle, LA, maybe New York and some of the other ones. I get the sense that they're kind of like, we're shucking our old bonds and we're moving forward, and you don't see that in Chicago.
In Chicago, you see guys, aldermen, helping their friends who are going to get contracts.
Well,
there's huge contracts coming up at Midway, at O'Hare, everywhere. Everything's a deal. Anytime, how do you not, for all my life, I've been covering politics in Chicago, and I'm not on it on a daily basis now as I used to be. But there's a brutalizing aspect of politics in Chicago. It's probably like being a cop. After a while, your skin gets so leathery around your heart that you can't even see the good anymore. How do you deal with that?
Oh, good question. I mean, I try to, I've got a couple kids. The hard part for me is coming back and not being angry about what I've seen during the day. But you've kind of got to shed a little bit of that thick skin every once in a while and kind of try to get back to family, get back to what matters. And I think what happens in the city is you see so many bad deals, deal after deal after deal, that it kind of wears on you. And but in the other sense, it makes it easier for me when I see a bad deal to call it out and try to work every angle, every question I can to figure out what's really going on with it. And I think when you talk about the progressive caucus and the city council, it's not just this left, caucus. It's not a liberal caucus, because we've got people from all aspects and, different parts of the city. What we're trying to build is sort of this group that's out there trying to fix things and change the way that we're doing business. So when you see us in City Hall and we're questioning the Catalyst Fund for 2.5 hours and everybody up front, the mayor's people are getting ticked off and, getting abrasive with us. you know, I kind of look at that as not so much a badge of honor, but a badge that says, hey, we're gonna stand this thing up on end and try to figure out how it's going to shake down.
The problem is, if you ask the residents of Chicago what the Catalyst Fund is, they couldn't tell you.
No.
But it's a deal-making machine that's going to cost them money. Explain it to us.
Well, basically, the concept, when you hear about it, you think it's good. We're going to invest in neighborhoods that need the dollars the most and need construction jobs and need development of any kind. And when you really get down into the details, what it is that you're taking $100 million, you're putting it in the hands of private investors, hands off from the city council, hands off from the inspector general, no FOIA, no OMA, Open Meetings Act.
And no FOIA mean no freedom of information.
Right.
So you can't find out what they're thinking about before they do it.
Right. And the rules and regulations will be set by those investors. And that is what...
Is it their money?
It's taxpayers' dollars. $100 million in taxpayers' dollars that are now going to be off limits to actual taxpayers.
So we're giving money to private guys to play with for their own purposes.
To commingle with their own money.
And right. We can't even ask questions about
no
it.
Risk for them? I mean...
No, there's no risk because, you know, the liability falls on the taxpayer. So if you blow $20 million, you know, who's to say that it wasn't a good deal and it just, you know, something fell apart somewhere in midstream? That's the problem. You know, guys like John Arena and I, we were hammering these guys for hours and hours and days and months before this, saying, we want the details. We want to be able to craft something different, put in amendments, which we tried to do. You know, when we tried to, I'll give you a quick example in this budget session, when we tried to put an amendment in for crossing guards and the mayor's billboard program, which is the direct benefit of another friend of his, you know, I put in the amendments. The chairman said, your motion's out of order. You can put it in writing if you want. So I'm like, fine. You know what? That ticks me off, but fine. I'll put it in writing. I put it in writing. I give it to the chair. I'm waiting for the meeting the Monday before the vote, and they cancel the meeting. So that's what frustrates me, is when you try to avert democracy, if you try to derail it. That makes me more mad than actually not being able to put a stop to something. But this is the kind of stuff that happens here. You just, you try to ask a lot of questions. You try to change things for the better. But it's really a difficult road to travel.
And those that stand up in the public life, that stand up against what they see as unethical and corrosive, are then they themselves treated as the irritant?
Oh, it's, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, in other words, Scott Wagspeck is the guy, Scott, again, you know, you're going to bring this up again. In other words, they have all their money at stake. They're taking your money. They're spending it on their friends and their deals. And Scott, in this social mix of politics, is the guy who's...
I'm the irritant. Yeah.
You're the irritant. How does that work in a free society?
Well, it doesn't. That's what I was saying. It doesn't work in other cities that way. And that's what fascinates me. When you talk to these other elected officials in other cities and you tell them these stories, you know, when we're at conferences and stuff or just meeting and or on the phone, they're like, you did what? What did they do? And they just can't believe it. And that corrosive effect is what has turned the city inside out for decades. And I think, you know, maybe that's where you and I see eye to eye. We don't see eye to eye on all the policies. And I know that. I mean, I know that a lot of people don't agree with some of my policies or things that I would do to change the city. And that's fine. I think for me, I've always looked at things as, you know, try to be as frugal as you can with taxpayers' dollars. Sometimes you're going to have to spend more money in other areas to make up for the fallacies or the corrosive effects. But, you know, that's as long as I think I'm chopping away at the bad deals or trying to stop those. That's where if you're losing $20 million here and $50 million there, and I say, look, I got a program that'll cost $5 million. And, you know, if I've saved $50 million here or $20 million there, that small cost program might have a better effect than something like this Catalyst Fund that I don't think will.
Well, because the big deals are not about the people.
They're not at all.
They're all about the insiders. And there are...
The parking meter deal was exactly that. And you remember how we found out about
it. Tell us again so people know.
I got a call one day. Some guy said there's trash everywhere in the alley. I went out to go clean it up, found documents, and started deciphering them. And that's how we found out that the deal had been, you know, really cooked up in the back room. And but we already knew. I mean, we knew ahead of time that
so
it was
somebody
gonna
be a, did a dumpster drop to you. So
no,
you
no,
could see it.
No, it was just garbage in an alley that I went to go clean up. But
really?
Yeah, that was all. But we already knew, you know, months before that it was a bad deal. Like when we got that thing in, I think it was December 2008. I read that thing over the weekend because we basically had a couple days to knock it out, you know, to look at it, and we were going to vote on it. And you could tell right off the bat it was a bad deal. 75-year deal was just idiotic.
75-year deal worth billions of dollars thrown out to the aldermen to vote on in a matter of 48 hours.
Yeah.
So you know right away something's wrong here.
Yep.
Right? And you exposed it, and you did it in a way that your exposing of it, coupled with the stupidity of the deal makers, where people had to actually put money in their pocket, which I love. This is what I love about taxes, the payroll withholdings.
Yeah.
People don't realize what they're doing, especially if you're a salary worker. But if you have to stick money in your pocket and get 10 pounds a quarter so you could park, all of a sudden people, right? They lost their money. Right?
Hand in the pocket. That's right? It was a direct effect.
And then the money, Danny Michalopoulos wrote that the money, found out the money was going to Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi, yeah. That was a great article or a great series by Dan. And that's where we kind of found that other information a few months later. But what it did, so the deal was bad, really horrific deal. And we're going to bear the effects of that for another few decades, you know, long after we're gone. But there were deals after that that were just as bad. And what it showed me and what I tried to impart on some of these other aldermen was, look, here's how the deal is made. And this is what we have to go after when we ask questions. We already know how they do these. And so you get the bad deal, but now you know how the inside game works. And that's how you try to pick apart the other deals. Now, we're not able to stop them. But I think educating the taxpayer and educating other people about how this is done will eventually lead people to say, okay, now we know what we need to change.
Does it bother you that people get upset? Like, why isn't anybody doing anything about this when you are doing something about it and they're just not paying attention to what the heck you're saying?
Yeah, it kind of does sometimes. I mean, I try to put it out in my email newsletter. I try to get it out there, different social media. But I understand. I mean, you can't be following City Hall every day, like you just said.
Well, I know a columnist that I'm going to have to talk to. He writes for the Tribune. He'll have to do more of this stuff because there's more coming, and there is. It is about the future of a great city. Good in the city, but it's almost like there's a disease that you have to cut it out, or if you don't cut it out, it'll overwhelm everything. Look at the can kicking down the road. Fiscally, we have the mayor telling us everything's fine. And again, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, yes, we've had lunch. Yes, you love the Rahm Father portrait. You're always welcome to come on this show to defend it. And I promise you, I'm not going to sound like Bill Curtis. Okay.
The infomercial.
But where was I? Oh, okay. So the future of the city, where is it? I don't know if we really have one. He's kicking the pension can down the road. All these things, he sells it like I've taken care of it.
Right.
But
Look at the cranes.
Yeah. But yeah, look at the cranes. But has he taken care of it?
Cubs and cranes. Yeah, right. I remember that. It was the first. No, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at what's going to hit us in a few years on the pension deal, and
the municipal pension workers,
municipal pensions, right. But take the police, for instance. We knew we needed police for not just safety and, you know, public safety, but we need police hires so that we can pay back and maintain that pension system, right? You just need to keep people going in there. When you do the overtime at the rate that he has, over $100 million a year for several years now, you're not paying into the pension fund. And you're diminishing that, and it's going to make it harder, maybe not in the next 5 years, but maybe 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line. That's where it hits the hardest. And for him not to be thinking that far ahead and instead thinking short term, like, how am I going to look, you know, in 3 years?
Yeah.
That's the problem. So we need to double down and support those workers, but we also need to make sure that we're managing those systems the right way, because they are delicate. You know, they're not like they used to be. We've got the new tiers, new people coming in are going to be on a different tier. I think that's really good. So I think they've managed that part well. But
in other words, they're going to be putting new hires will be paying more for their pensions than existing.
Yeah, not getting the same benefits.
Right.
No more double dipping or triple dipping.
Unless you work for the mayor.
Yeah. But
under Daley, they used to have the deal was you'd go to the work for City Hall, take care of Daley, then you go to the CTA. They still do it.
Mm.
CTA or the Park District, get another pension, then go to Cook County Board, get another pension. That's how they play.
Yeah, all that's got to stop.
Yeah.
And I think it finally will. But that's just, you know, one thing that I always, I used to hear a lot going back to like these deals, the meter deal and such. You know, I'd be sitting there in the meeting and somebody say, you got to stop asking questions. You know, you've got to stop doing this. And say, why? Why would I want to stop asking questions, you know, or trying to? I already know what the end game is. So the questions I'm asking are revolving around, like, how do I eke out this information or squeeze it out of them? And they'd say, well, you know, you're going to be out of a job. You know, you're going to lose as alderman. What are you going to do after that? And I just look, I can do anything I want. I mean, I could, you know, should we walk away from this and go have a life that's, you know, with so many other things to do out there? And I think that's part of it is that people feel like you ask questions, you're going to get in trouble. And
it's a gang. That's what a gang
mentality.
That's how a gang thinks, not a free people.
Right.
But they always feel this way. And it all depends on who's the mayor. And it's all about protecting the mayor, whoever it is. I don't have anything personally against Rahm Emanuel or Rich Daley or the others. It's just the system that perpetuates them is wrong.
Right.
It's wrong because the people are getting screwed and they're leaving town.
Yeah.
Right? The middle class. We can't afford to lose the middle class. And they're going.
They are. I get that a lot from people in my ward from the area that are kind of like, look, I've had enough. Nice try. You know, you did a good job, but we've got to pack up and go. And I want to tell people, like, look, if I love this city. I love the people. I want people to stay and try to fight it out. But, you know, they get frustrated, and I understand that. So that's why we just keep plugging away and try to find different ways of going about business here in the city.
And you talk about that. I mean, I think I read it last week that you know, the average family of four is going to pay over $1,100 in annually in taxes additionally starting next year under this new budget here. And that's not sustainable. I mean, no families can support that. I mean, no one's getting a $1,000 raise every year or even close to it.
Yeah. When you look at the tax burden and that number of 1,100, I've seen 17 too, but the, when they try to compare taxes, property taxes here to other places, you've also got to include, and they keep saying, oh, it's lower. You've got to include all the fines, all the fees, all the other extras that kind of keep coming at you, the water hikes, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. That was the thing about this budget. They were talking, I haven't raised any taxes.
That was just held.
Yeah.
Right.
It was like, yeah, but that's why you did those hikes back in September and earlier in the year, because you knew they would never pass in this budget or the scrutiny on this budget would be much more. And so that goes to, you know, that number keeping it low. But I think the more important article I saw a few weeks ago was in Cranes, and it was the one about pay to play. And all these you know, business owners were like, oh, we hate this pay to play. We hate it. It really keeps us kind of stuck in this system. But we love it because we get what we want.
That's the establishment talking, right?
Yeah.
That's what they do.
You brought it up one time at that City Club meeting, and you were like, what? It's sort of related. It's that string of thought, and it was the city's in this state because of people in this room, right?
Right.
What are you guys going to do about it? I think you had
asked them,
gone along that line of reasoning.
They're all. I was at a City Club. I made a speech, or I was part of a panel discussion, right? And the City Club's an interesting group, but they are part of the insiders, right? They don't. All they're trying to do, it's like Washington writ large. I mean, Chicago writ large, Washington. They're not really upset about Trump or Hillary or what. They want to know what's in it. It's a human nature thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do they get out of it? Where can I be? What will my kids be okay? Will I have that job? Will I be able to leverage that deal on K Street? Or will Alderman Burke take my calls? Because now I'm, even though I don't call him, but I mean, if you're in business, and that's one thing that bothers me. I've known these guys for 30 years, more, some of them. I don't know if aldermen should be representing private clients. It just bothers me. How do they get away? How do they do that?
I have a problem with it. I mean, I work full time, and I could see doing that once would be an ethical issue or just a real problem.
But how do you, if I'm going to represent all these different people that want deals, how can I represent my ward?
You could represent your ward, but I don't think you could represent the city very well. I think that, you know, as an alderman, we should be looking at what's happening with this whole city. And I try to tell these other guys that, look, you know, progressive caucus members, it isn't just about our individual wards. That would be easy. You know, and there's no for voting no and all those kind of things. I don't see this as a direct retaliation. I look at the city as a whole, and I don't think there's an issue there. But I don't think you can represent the city correctly in a broader context.
Yeah, I don't. And I don't think you could represent the state correctly if you're also representing the real estate deals downtown, as Michael Madigan does. I just think that that's the kind of inside game that's unfair. And people don't think they, and so the corruption is not some alderman or elected official taking an envelope. The corruption is the corruption of the people who feel, okay, then I have to play by this corrupt game in order to get what I want. And that's, so in other words, it's perpetual corruption.
Yeah.
It's cynicism. And what do people do? Their child graduates from training wheels to the real bike. And they leave, and they say it's because of corruption. But really, it might be other reasons, right?
Sure.
And they go, okay, so now that I'm thoroughly depressed on this, what can we look forward to?
Don't be depressed. I think you know that there's people out there trying to do what you want, which is to break up the system. It takes decades. I think when you've been entrenched for decades, it takes a lot of time to break that up.
But they're going to go.
Years.
They're going. Eventually, they're going.
Look at the high school students that are coming up. You know, some of them now in college. And are they going to come back to Chicago and say, "I know what's going on. I'm going to change the system." And maybe that is where we see things start to break it down a little bit. You got groups like Mikvah Challenge that you get a lot of these kids who are learning what's going on in the system. So maybe there's hope there.
In the next few years, we're going to have a mayoral election. What is it, 2019,
yes.
I think, right? I wrote a column with, you were quoted in it, and we talked about it, and you had also been on the Rokan show. Jeff had called you to do the Rokan show about his that ridiculous infomercial. I see the mayor moving farther and farther to the left to protect himself. Do you see that?
Well, you know,
at least symbolically.
Only on the surface, only symbolically. Deep down, I don't think he can do it. I mean, look at, you know, he's a deal maker. He was in the White House. He knows how the game works. He can do these catalyst fund $100 million deals in the blink of an eye. And that wipes out, to me, a lot of the sort of liberal-minded or social-minded things that he works on. I don't really buy into that. I mean, I'm happy to see a few things happen here and there, but are you really digging down? Are you really looking at what the core problems are in this city? And not so sure that's happening.
One is mental health. We have Tom Dart talks about the jails being full of really mental health repositories.
Yeah.
Cops all tell us this. And meanwhile, the mayor's cutting mental health, right?
Yeah, and who has to respond to the
what
mental
is he,
health
how is he cutting
on the corner? It's the police officer. They're not sending out the Department of Family Services to deal with these people. There's thousands of homeless people up and down the metro lines in Chicago, up and down the river, along bridges. I mean, you could go out, you'd be amazed what you see now, absolutely amazed, under the viaducts. And we're not helping these people. You know, I think we're actually making it worse when you cut the mental health clinics. And that I take part blame for that because I actually voted for his first budget thinking this guy was going to come in and, hey, okay, I'll give him a chance. He might do something right here. And boom, you know, that was not a very smart move.
Well, cutting the mental health clinics by in and of themselves is not necessarily terrible if you're reprogramming to take care of these things.
But yeah, they privatized them, so they were claiming that when they privatized them, it was going to take care of all these people. They lost thousands of people. They lost track of them. Didn't follow to their next doctor. Didn't follow to the private health clinics or the federally qualified ones. And so I don't, you know, I don't have full faith that he's going to continue along that line, especially when you can peel off $100 million and kind of play with it. But, you know, I mean, you look at, he's still a deal maker. His brother just met with Trump. Ari did.
Nice, huh?
The other day. I mean,
that's about what? Getting talent for the Trump, for the Trump inaugural, right?
It'll be a reality show in the White House.
It will be. I mean, isn't that really about getting music, you know, having, that's what I saw it was.
Yeah.
You know, the, he's got to have an inaugural. There has to be stars there. And can you get the stars in, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure if part of that is, can you call my brother in Chicago, right?
Might have something to do with it, yeah.
That's how it works. Now that we're getting into this next election cycle, do you think the mayor will try to get rid of you?
I don't think he can. I think he tried in the last election with, what was it, the Chicago PAC?
Yeah.
Something like that. And, you know,
run through, by another soccer friend of ours that we know.
Yeah.
She yeah. loves the Fire, too.
She, I
right?
guess.
But you were on the different sides there.
Yeah. And, right. But that happened in the prior election, too. You know, I've been through a couple of them where they threw everything they had at me. And I suppose they'll continue to do that. But I don't have a problem with it. I mean, that's, you know, we saw people running. They threw a lot of money, tens of thousands of dollars at me, and, you know, made up a lot of garbage. But I think the more you educate people again, the more hopefully they see through that. Some people don't, but that's okay. I mean, that's the hardball politics that you got to deal with here. And I expect that, but, you know, you want to talk a little bit about that. You know, the vote that I just took, I was really upset with a lot of pieces of his budget this year. But I also looked at it and said, can you imagine not voting for the new police officers, even though I think it's been a somewhat of a charade? You know, when he first put that number out, he was like, oh, 1,000 new officers. Right. And everybody repeat that. Keep saying 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. And then when we kept asking for details, and I'm still waiting for a laundry list of answers on a lot of letters that we sent out for different departments, including the police, and, you know, about retirees, attrition, hires. Right. When you finally
the
get
it.
The
real number.
Yeah. When you finally get it, you're like, okay, let's be realistic.
Something like that.
And that bothers me, but, and I know it bothers a lot of the officers who need backup and need support and need, and the citizens who want more officers out there, or, well, I shouldn't say more. How about enough to keep the city safe in areas that were, but then also deal with the issues of violence and the poverty that we have in the rest of the areas? And this is sort of a small step forward in that. So, yeah, you know, you got to vote for the budget and say, you know, I'm willing to help you out there, even though you've got a lot of poison pills in this thing.
So, yeah, and that, look, it's about compromise. If
yeah.
it wasn't compromise, I would run the city. You would be my chief of staff, and we would cut, it would be screaming bloody murder in 2 days, but we'd get it done. You have to cut, and you have to raise taxes. Be realistic. After 20, 30 years, 40 years, going back to Harold Washington, all the excess, all of it, Byrne, Sawyer, Daley, is just one thing after another with these people.
But I think
and
there's
still
a lot
this
of things.
City, and still this city, the people of the city are still, they're going to work,
they
raising their children, they love the town,
yeah,
right?
We love the city. But I think we can all do better in that sense. And they're relying on people to come out and do better. You know, they're every year they're hoping, come on, please do it the right way. And they're disappointed because we don't. But, you know, I think there's, on top of cuts and things like that, there's, when you think of cuts, there's a lot of things that you can readjust, or you don't have to do certain deals. You don't have to do, I mean, you look at some of these bad deals that have gone down, just stop doing the bad deals and there'd be money on the table.
One, you know? We're going to talk
mean,
about.
That is the amazing part. It's like, stop doing bad deals and there'd be money there.
Because it's not about the city.
Right.
They don't care about the city. It's about driving that Lexus. It's about their friend with the Lexus, okay?
I mean, you saw how much CPS got $730 million out of that last bond deal, the second to last bond deal. And how much did the bond companies make? They made $110 million on that amount.
That's what happens.
I mean, that was staggering.
When you're
deadbeat. That's not a Lexus. That's a, you know, Bentley.
But that's but, when you're a deadbeat, that's what happens when you want to raise money.
Yeah.
Right? You got, right? I mean, over the years.
And I would hate to come in there and see what's really going on behind
God,
the scenes.
The schools? Forget
if
it.
You got in there and you were kind of like, "What? Okay, everybody, what's really going on? Not just the schools, but in the fifth floor.
Okay.
How do you guys really do all this stuff back here? If you got in, you
pull,
were mayor, and you,
you
looked, and you were
back
like,
the curtain?
Holy
yeah.
schmoly.
It's a Chicago
we're
word.
In deep, dude, Batman. But that would be the scary part, to see what's actually going on. And then could you really do the cut the things that you wanted, or is it so in deep that you're going to need waiters to get
just
to
remember
get
this, Scott Wagsbeck, if anybody asks you, you're my favorite alderman, but if anyone asks you to talk about policy, but they say, we'll send a car, we'll meet in Chinatown for spaghetti dinner at midnight, don't go. Okay, Scott? Just promise me that.
I will.
Okay.
Yeah. Been too close.
And when you come back, we're going to have you back on, because we have to, this has to be, I think, looked at systematically.
Yeah.
And people have to get a running vocabulary so we can understand this beyond just personalities for the people. So they can understand how their money's being spent.
Exactly.
All right, Scott. So thank you for joining us today, and another edition of the Chicago Way.